Indulgence on Magic 105.4 with Martin Shaw.
All good. So it's another Magic Indulgence. Welcome to Sunday evening and a lovely long Easter weekend at Magic 105.4. Very pleased to welcome tonight, playing some of his favourite Magic songs. Can't wait to hear some of the choices, in fact. And talking to us about his new show on BBC One, George Gently, is going to be airing tonight after Magic Indulgence, but more on that later. Martin Shaw, welcome to Magic. A very good evening.
Good evening to you. Thank you.
Little Bird tells me you're a bit of a Magic listener on the... Well, on the quiet, not necessarily on the quiet.
Well, volume turned up high. No, I listen to it in the car whenever I'm within range. Sadly, because I live in Norfolk, I can't get it as often as I would like. So increase the signal, please.
Yeah, don't worry. We're planning world domination very
good,
soon. I'm sure it'll be fine. Now, let's talk about the new show, George Gently, which is airing tonight on BBC One.
Yeah.
This is the big new project. Mm-hmm. It looks amazing. Set in the 60s. Mm. It's another police role for you. Mm-hmm. What's that about?
What, me playing all the police roles? You don't get much choice, you know, if you're an actor on TV these days. You're either going to be a doctor, a policeman, or a lawyer. And so what you look at is the script and the cast. And we've got a wonderful script. Peter Flannery is one of the best writers on television, and a fantastic cast.
Oh, this was the guy that did the stellar Our Friends in the North.
Exactly. Yeah.
So is it all about the script for you?
All, yes, 100%.
And you looked at that and just thought, this is it.
Yeah.
This is me.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell us a little bit about the story.
The story, it's about an old-time cop who is approaching retirement in 1964. So you can see the sort of policing that he's used to. Somebody who fought in the Second World War and was with Montgomery and El Alamein and Sicily. So he knows about toughness and violence. And at the beginning of the show, his wife is murdered by a big criminal, big time London gangster that he's been chasing for a while. And he decides to retire and give up. And then he gets tantalized by a small case, seemingly small case up in Durham, goes up to investigate and finds that the baddie is deeply involved. And so it's a confrontation with his nemesis. So. Played by Phil Davis, the magnificent Phil Davis, who gives the best villain, I think, anywhere. And in the process meets this young detective sergeant, John Backus, played by Lee Ingleby. And they get to be kind of abrasive friends, because he likes the young man very much. The young man thinks, well, he's the legendary George Gently of the Yard has come up here. And... they strike up a sort of a father and son relationship. That's it in a nutshell.
I love it. It's brilliant, concisely. Tell us about Detective Sergeant Backus, then Lee Ingleby, because he's this guy that you're working alongside, and that must have been quite good fun. He's got huge respect for you, hasn't he, as an actor?
Well, it's very mutual. I've got huge respect for him, too. I'd seen him before. I saw him in The Street, and I saw him in Master and Commander. He's got a fabulous career. And he's such a nice man and a very, very good actor. So we just had a lot of fun. And I think our approaches are very similar. We both went to the same drama school, coincidentally. And so we have the same approach to acting. And neither of us like doing what's usual. And so we just enjoyed surprising each other, you know, and throwing a curveball here and there.
Well, it's virtually impossible to imagine looking at you now, but of course you were growing up in the 60s.
Yeah, that's very nice. I was, yes. I was grown up in the 60s.
Yeah, well, yes, not quite as grown up as we are now, I suppose. But no. It must have been, you know, fascinating to sort of go back to that era again. And what do you remember? And particularly, I mean, London's changed beyond recognition, hasn't
Absolutely,
it, since the 60s?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Do you think for the better or worse or just different?
Well, I'm bound to say for the worst. But then, given the age I am, I'm bound to say that, you know. And I do know that everybody's always said that, you know. I mean, in the 60s, people were saying, well, it ain't like it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the 40s, people were saying, oh, I should have seen it in the 20s. It's always the same. Mm, it's a law of nature. And I don't know when that ever stops.
What was it, as swinging as everybody says?
Yes, 60s? It was swinging. And it was exciting. It was particularly exciting if you were involved in the arts. I mean, you would have to stop and think now just to even include acting in the arts. Then acting was very firmly entrenched in the arts because you had individual one-off dramas on TV several times a week. drama was a very serious business that was undertaken by people who'd been very seriously trained, who'd worked incredibly hard to get there, and every city had a repertory company that was producing plays all the time. And that's all shrunk away and gone away.
Do you think the sort of celebrity obsessive culture of the country's got a bit to blame for that at the moment?
I think it's entirely to blame.
Entirely to blame.
Yes.
It's not good the way it's going, is it?
No, I think it's very silly because celebrity in itself is not an end in itself, you know. I mean, really, celebrity is something to be avoided, not something to be embraced. But because, like so many things, it's very temporary. People think, oh, well, it's okay to be famous for...
Being famous.
Yeah. or famous for a couple of weeks. And now what? What was all that about, you know?
What are your abiding memories of the 60s? Have you got any really good stories about the 60s and being in London at that time?
I don't know whether they're good stories. I have many, many abiding memories because it was a very exciting time because things were changing so rapidly. And we'd gone through the period of austerity after the war where we couldn't afford to have any good things because we had to export everything to earn enough money so that we could use them for ourselves. And suddenly in the 60s, the economy was starting to get more balanced and things were getting to be okay. And drama had been stuck in a particular style, in a particular rada, black and white movie, Elstree,
right,
sort of way.
A lot of people coming from the same sort of
exactly,
genre.
Mm. Yeah. And then suddenly in the 60s, everything was entirely and completely different. And what in America was called the method, and over here was called kitchen sink drama. You know, yeah. People have to put these labels.
There was a lot of better names, haven't they, in America?
Yeah, they've got to have a label for it. But really what it was people were embracing naturalism and reality.
Mm.
And it was very exciting to do that.
So it was quite gritty.
Very gritty.
Yeah.
And suddenly it got to be less about demonstrating the character and more about being the character.
Yes. So you really had to immerse yourself in what you're doing at the time.
But at the same time, you still needed the practical skills of voice production and using your body as a tool in the same way that a dancer does.
So it was a real art.
It was an art form.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was acknowledged as such.
Mm.
And now it's not the same.
No.
You know, and I lament that.
But having said that, on the flip side of the coin, when you started out, you probably, someone has said you're going to be starring in a great drama on BBC One. It's 2007. Mm-hmm. I mean, longevity has been a wonderful thing for you, hasn't it?
I've been incredibly fortunate, yes. I mean, incredibly fortunate. It hasn't stopped since 1966. In fact, 65, which is when I left drama school.
Do you think you make your own luck in that respect in acting? Because it's a tough profession, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, that's quite a philosophical question in a way, because the paradox is I think we make our own luck because of the attitude and the energies that we put out into the universe without being too metaphysical about it. But it is about luck. And I think you need a certain level of skill and professionalism.
Yeah.
And you need to be quite a nice person. Mm. Otherwise, people don't want to work with you.
But speaking of nice people, you were talking about the villain in George Gently earlier. Mm. Surely it must be still, a lot of actors say, it's much better fun playing the villain half the time.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, you just revel in it because you just get to plumb the darkest sides of your nature. And be a real swine.
Have you got a dark side?
We've all got a dark side, yes.
Mm. I can't see it yet. Shall I carry on digging?
Maybe not. On.
you were filming a lot for George Gently out in Ireland, weren't you? Is it a country you know particularly well? Or is it
no, I didn't know it well at all. I'd been there briefly, but I'd never spent any time there. And it's just delightful. Everything that people say about it is true.
I'd imagine as a country they sort of embrace you with open arms and very, very friendly, warm people, aren't they?
Yes, and they are. They're still reeling, I think, economically from having changed from being a fairly poor nation to suddenly being one of the most successful economies in the world.
Yeah, the Celtic Tiger and the Euro coming in.
Indeed.
I mean, it's a big old economy now, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is huge. And, I mean, as always, there's a flip side to it. A lot of them are saying, what have we done? What have we done? Because a lot of those quiet and beautiful remote places are suddenly sprouting marinas.
Yes, scared of losing their identity in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are losing their identity, and corporate greed is also very strong over there.
Now, we know you're a Magic listener. We've already established that. So you've got no excuse to pick some really good songs for us on the show tonight.
Go for it.
Can we go with your first one? Beach Boys, God Only Knows. Tell us about that and what sort of memories it has for you.
Just the memory, well, but all the same, really, just memories of the time. And I just like melody. Melody and musicianship.
And they still sound good, these songs, don't they?
They really do. And it's very odd when you see them perform, and you see these old guys performing, and you think, well, wait a minute, I'm the same age.
Yeah, and I think even on a sunny day now in London, you can drive past a car and there'll be, you know, chaps in their mid-20s with the Beach Boys playing out of the car, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, and we all used to like to take the mickey out of ABBA, but then you listen to the albums and you find yourself singing along to every single one.
Still sound great. I mean, probably far better than some songs that were released 2 years ago and have dated worse already. So, okay, Beach Boys, your first choice then, Martin.
Thank you.
You've played a lot of policemen.
Mm-hmm.
You've played a lot of judges. You're inexplicably drawn to murder. There's an awful lot of things you've done with murder in the title, but as you were saying, I mean, would you call it typecasting, or is it just happens to be something that, you know, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth?
I think it's more of that. Mm. It's just what's done. It's what is made.
Yes, yes.
And drama these days is dictated by the whims of focus groups a lot, you know.
Everything is, I think, a focus group these days, isn't it?
And they believe it's what people want. And so the artistic ones amongst us say, right, well, let's just work within that framework and do the best we can.
And when you get a script offered to you, is there a sort of network of old friends and colleagues and associates, you know, they'll pick up the phone and say, Martin, how do you fancy this? I mean, presumably people that know you very well will know the kind of thing that will attract you.
I think it has more to do with reputation than cronyism. And in acting, more than most things, you're only as good as your last one. And you can't be sentimental about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the ratings are very bad for this, I don't think they will be, but if they should
not be, after this kind of publicity.
Not after this, no. But if they should be, then, you know, everything will change.
Easter Sunday evening. It's an absolute winner, isn't it?
I would hope so.
I hope so.
And it's also very, very, very good.
Yes.
But there is no space these days for moderate success. Moderate success is failure.
You know? Yes.
And you don't get the luxury of trying and of failing.
It's become more brutal in a
absolutely,
kind of way,
which is why I think there are so many of the same sorts of program, because nobody wants to take the risk.
It must be funny to see sort of art transformed effectively to what our ratings. I mean, the BBC are obviously as guilty as anyone else of that these days. And mm-hmm. go, actually, well, we got 5 million, they got 3 million. That's what it's all about now, bottom line, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And it could be argued that a public service broadcaster doesn't really belong in that sort of race.
Absolutely. But now we're getting really deep. So let's get back to your next song choice. Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes, Up Where We Belong.
Absolutely.
Now, this is an 80s, isn't it? It's from the soundtrack of Dirty Dancing, I think.
It was Officer and a Gentleman.
Officer and a Gentleman, I think you're right. Yeah. I should know that. We play it so much.
Yeah.
Would you remember what you were doing around the time of the release of this? Well, where were you in life?
Probably. I don't remember where I was, but it was just watching the movie. I loved the movie. And I love aeroplanes, you see. So anything to do with aeroplanes will get me going.
Pilot roles. Coming forward, any roles
nice.
Of pilots? Yeah, fancy that?
Oh, certainly fancy a bit of that.
See, Tom Cruise got Top Gun.
Yes, I know.
It could have gone so differently.
I know, but there aren't many 60-year-old pilots, you see, not flying fast jets anyway.
I think they'd like that in Britain, you know. They want their stars young in America. I think over here, I think it worked very well.
Well, pitch it then.
Absolutely.
Write it down and I'll see what I can do for you.
How much commission?
10%.
We'll work it out, okay. Talking of your favourite films, obviously, you know, big fan of movies, anyone particularly stands out for you as a film or as an actor, indeed. We were talking a bit about Al Pacino earlier.
Pacino is just unsurpassed. He's fantastic. I love to watch Edward Norton because he just immerses himself completely and becomes somebody different every time in a very subtle way. Have you seen The Illusionist?
No, but I hear it's very good.
Great
This is
film.
The magician one,
yeah.
isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. That's a great film. Anthony Hopkins is just a hero of mine. And it's all about focused passion, which is why I love this Joe Cocker track, because he just throws everything out the window and puts his heart and soul into it.
And what a voice.
And then the combination with Jennifer Warnes, who has a really beautiful voice, and Cocker's raw passion, I think it's a brilliant combination.
London in the present day, Martin, then. All right, we talked about the 60s, congestion charging. Has it worked?
Well, it did for a while, and I think it's a good idea. You know, I think when there is a severe traffic problem like there is in London and a pollution problem, then people must pay to use their cars. I wish there was a quid pro quo and that the public transport system was better to make up for it. I wish also that 4x4s weren't targeted. You know, why not target the cars that create the worst emissions instead of being really silly about it and say just 4x4s?
You used to live in the centre of town, didn't you? Paddington Way.
I've lived Paddington Way, Stoke Newington Way. I've lived all over London, I think.
What made your decision to move out ultimately?
I just love the country. I like being in the country. And I found that every time I left London, I took a deep sigh of relief and just felt myself relaxing. And I thought, well, why don't I just go there then? And I went to work in Norfolk about 15 years ago. And after 4.5 years, I was still living in the same rented cottage and not coming back to my house in London.
Wow. So that must have been very comfortable.
Yeah. So I thought, I don't need this house in London. So I left.
It's interesting. One of the big stories this week is about this train in France that goes at a ridiculous speed. I think it's about the same as a plane. Although it's not a very British thing to have trains that fast and probably will never happen, that the whole country would be changed overnight because you could do London to Glasgow at that speed in, say, an hour.
And absolutely.
So people would think very, very differently about a commute. I mean, you could literally think about commuting from Glasgow to London, which must be crazy.
It's true.
There's surely got to be an attraction in that.
There is, but there's always a downside to everything, you know. I mean, the population of Norfolk seems to have doubled in the 15 years since I've lived there.
Well, it's become fashionable, I think, since you moved in. You were ahead of the trend there.
But I've nothing against that per se. What I am against, passionately against, is the destruction of rural life. And there is great value in rural life, and people have chosen a rural life because that's what they want to live. And there seems to be a drive to destroy it completely and turn it into suburban life. And I think that would be a terrible loss.
Green belts are the big watchwords at the moment, aren't they? There's an awful lot of new buildings.
A terrible loss to our heritage.
Now, your next song choice is Elvis. Perennially popular, lots of Elvis on Magic, and you've chosen In the Ghetto. What about that?
It could have been almost any Elvis number, but I like this one because it's a ballad, and I just like anything that he does. And of course, I played him for 13 months and got inside the skin of the guy, so I sort of feel there's a personal...
Never met him, even at a distance?
No.
Was that Elvis phenomenon, because obviously around at the time, was it as mad as everyone looks back and reflects on it now?
Yes, it was. There was so much hysteria about it. I mean, when it all started, I was still at school. It was around about, 59, I suppose. And it was just wildly unfair that anybody should do this. And it wasn't so much that we were indignant about the morality of it. It was more like, well, that's cheating. You know, shaking your bits around like that, that's cheating.
Oh, right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So when he died, it really was a national mourning, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. I mean, by then, by 74, it had become acceptable. And he was a national institution. And he'd spawned a whole new art form, if you like, to go back to our previous conversation. But there's never been a voice like that since.
Nice. And the music lives on, and he still sounds phenomenal, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And there is an urban myth, I don't know whether it's true, but everybody has an Elvis moment once a day.
Okay, that's interesting.
And this is ours. And if you think about it and just check out, you just check it out now, you'll get an Elvis moment every day.
There's not many musical artists you could say that about, is
no,
there?
No.
Interesting. Yeah, they won't be saying that about Jay-Z in 20 years, will they? I can't imagine, anyway.
Probably not.
You never know, but, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still at pains to remain perennially cool to my son, but, yeah, I think it's probably impossible. They'll always love you, but I'm beginning to wonder whether it's impossible to be a cool dad.
I think it's completely impossible to be a cool dad, yeah.
Just because of the fact you are dad.
Yeah, I mean, I was a cool dad for a brief period a few years ago when I started wearing boxer shorts, which, of course, aren't cool anymore.
Silk or cotton?
Cotton.
Okay.
And I was wearing boxer shorts when it was unfashionable. And then suddenly it became fashionable, and my daughter was very impressed. And for a while, I was a cool dad because I had been the first one to wear the boxer shorts, she thought. But that's, you know, Underwear is the best I ever got, I think, as far as being a cool dad.
And you can't try too hard, can you? Because that's when it starts to get really desperate and sad.
It gets very sad. Yes, I know.
Desperate times. Let's do some classic Motown. Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
Sexual Healing. So this is this was late 70s, wasn't it? Maybe early 80s.
Yeah, might be. Yes.
Was it? Yeah. And what were you doing around this time?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I mean, he must have been blasting out of the radio everywhere he went.
Yeah, yeah, everywhere. There is no particular memory associated with this, other than it just seemed like a good idea, you know, to relate sexuality and healing. And you hear it, and you think, of course, yes. And as far as I was aware, nobody had ever said it so publicly.
Mm.
And you just sit back and yeah, that's true. Okay.
And you know, last week he would have been 68. Isn't that incredible?
Wow.
68
really?
Years old. So that's food for thought.
Yeah.
Watching yourself on television tonight, I know that sounds like a strange question, but can you watch yourself back?
Yes, I can. I even watch rushes as well. Mm. You know, a lot of people don't like watching themselves, but I think it's very important to do so. I don't know whether I'll be watching tonight because I've seen it.
Yeah.
But I do watch because I won't know if I screw up otherwise. You know, if I don't watch it, I won't know what I'm doing wrong.
Are you hypercritical, would you say?
Incredibly.
Right. And has that got better or worse with age?
I think it's got better because when you first start watching yourself, you're criticising yourself for the wrong things. You know, you're thinking, oh, I didn't think I looked like that. Or, oh, God, I'm heavy. Oh, no, that hairstyle is awful. And as you get used to it, you start watching for being obvious, demonstrating rather than being trying too hard or not trying hard enough. You just watch the points that are really important for the art and the craft.
Do you start nitpicking yourself as a person or as the character?
Both.
Hmm.
Yes, both. And also, just you think, oh, that line didn't work, and so you just make a note in future to, you know, ask people not to write in that way or not to do such and such in such a way, and you just build a back catalogue of what works and what doesn't work, both for yourself and for the programme.
And what's next after George?
After George, in discussion, as I say, I'm so, such a cliche, but I am discussing something else with the BBC.
Right.
Which I can't tell you about, which is also another cliche, because we don't know whether we're going to do it.
Okay.
But it's if we do what I'm hoping we shall do.
Now it's getting really cryptic.
Yeah, it's getting really cryptic. Yeah, it will be very, very different.
And what about stage work? A lot of actors, you know, talk about the fact that they're never more alive than when they're on the stage because there's that immediate feedback from the audience.
It's true. And because you get to inhabit the role for more than a few minutes, sometimes even a few seconds when you're filming. And it's a wholly different discipline because the concentration has to be maintained. Sadly, the same can't be said of the audiences that we get.
No. But well, you must watch Perplexed when you've had things like this, when they found the Maria for the new Sound of Music in the West End, and they're doing the same this weekend with Grease, finding a new Danny and Sandy. Mm. Just from the general public, I mean, that must have just... If someone had told you that 40 years ago, you'd have been like, what?
Well, it wouldn't have been possible 40 years ago anyway, because the union wouldn't have allowed it.
Yeah, exactly. It was all an equity thing.
Yeah. And essentially, equity no longer exists for all practical purposes anyway. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I was very anti at first with the Maria thing, but the girl they chose was a trained actor.
Yes.
And absolutely deserved the role. Now they're doing it with Joseph and my mate Bill Kenwright.
Yeah.
And so it's even more of a split because I know that Bill won't do anything that's not entirely correct and entirely serious because he loves the theatre as much as I do. So I think it'll probably work. We watch this space.
But you know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the Brits who sort of love... Nothing succeeds more than failure, as they say here.
Yes.
It's almost put the early parts of these shows, whether it be X Factor, Fame Academy, one of the West End searches, is the entertainment, unfortunately, comes in the first few shows from the people that are really, really awful. And we seem to celebrate that,
It's
don't
a
we?
Blood sport.
Mm.
Yes. But you see, that's always been there, you know. It's just a substitute for the arena.
Yes.
And
gladiatorial type thing.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But it seems like it is possible to find genuine talent, just not all the time, from the general public.
Yes, as long as the idea is to mine that genuine talent, and it doesn't get to be about the people who are not so good. And as long as the accent is more on the positive than on the blood sport, then I don't think it can do any harm.
And there's potentially many world-class actors and actresses out there that will never know it.
Yes. The danger is, though, you see, with a business like ours, you do need a foundation behind you. And that's what's lacking nowadays. The apprenticeship is lacking. And knowing about all levels of the business and stage management and all the stuff that you need to know and the way to behave and elements of professionalism, which are missed out these days.
Next then, right, quintessential sound of the 60s, Martin, the Mamas and the Papas. What a brilliant, brilliant band.
They are fantastic. And this one is very nostalgic for me because I remember lying half asleep on various carpets, various substances coursing through one's veins, you know, listening to Joni Mitchell and James Taylor, whom I met recently when I did the BBC Breakfast Television, and James Taylor was there. It was just such a great thrill to see these icons. And this was playing all the time.
It's, and it's so California, isn't it?
It's so completely California and unbelievably now, with hindsight, it was so cool then, you know, listening to these laid-back, sun-washed Californians, you know.
Were you ever tempted by Hollywood?
I think everybody's tempted by Hollywood, but I was always doing too well here to go and do parts over there that I would turn down here.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it just seemed pointless to me to go over, you know, playing leading roles here, then to go over there and do three lines because it was an American show.
And people increasingly these days seem to go out on a wing and a prayer as opposed to actually having been offered something. And on the basis, if you hang around long enough, you might get hired.
But it's true. You will. Because, I mean, the wonderful thing about Los Angeles, I mean, I did it. I went out there and did the Los Angeles pilot season. And embrace it wholeheartedly, and you leave your ego outside because you're going to go right back to the beginning and sit there in casting calls, and nobody knows who you are. But the point is, if you tell them who you are and what you've done, unlike in England, they don't go, "Oh, really, darling, really?" They say, "Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, congratulations. You have your own show? Oh, how wonderful." And they just accept it at face value, you know. And if you do hang around there long enough, you will succeed.
It sort of starts rubbing off the positivity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that about America and Americans. But essentially, it came down to me, well, why would I want to play this because it's California or it's America when I would turn it down at home?
Yeah, no, agreed. Well, here's one of our homegrown British stars to end the show, Robbie Williams. See, I really wonder whether he's thinking, I should go back to take that. You know, I think they are obviously having such a phenomenal time at the moment.
They are, yeah.
He surely, in his weaker moments, thinks, I should go back and do this. It must be hard.
I don't know. I mean, he's got so much chutzpah, you know. This guy just does what he feels like. And again, in a completely different way artistically, but he just, like Joe Cocker, he just throws himself into it and just does it. And it just feels like he couldn't care less. He's got such a relaxed approach to what he does and has such an amiable, personable character that comes across. And he can do it. He can really sing. And I think this is such an anthem, this song. And it just pulls you into it and along with it.
It's been regularly voted, I think, as one of the top songs of the last 25 years. And I think it's one of the few that I can truly believe that's the case.
Yes, I believe it's the case too. And it's just, I just love it. And any time it comes on the radio, I stop and listen. It's not background music. I listen to this one and turn up the volume.
Well, it's a great one to end indulgence on. It's been lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Best of luck with the show tonight. I think you and I'll be opening the papers at the same time tomorrow, looking at the ratings now.
Let's hope.
I've got a vested interest now as well. But it's important not to get bogged down in that. You know, as long as they're enjoying it, and it's a good bit of television, which it sounds like it's.
I think it is. I think it's good entertainment.
Yeah, George Gently tonight, 9 o'clock, BBC One. Martin Shaw stars. Martin, best of luck with the projects. Hopefully next time you come and you can tell us all about the ones you've had to keep tight-lipped about this time.
I will do, that's a bargain.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hear more of Indulgence with Martin Shaw this Sunday at 7 p.m. only on Magic 105.4.